Blog Talk Radio.
After the Jets get a big win against the Cowboys. And they saw their playoff hopes get that much tougher. Brock Osweiler and the Denver offense could not muster anything in the second half. Stymied a progression. So it's controlling their own destiny for the Jets, and now they will need a Denver loss, a Kansas City loss, or a Pittsburgh loss. Denver is the more likely one, although at home against A.J. McCarron. We'll see how that works. But you got to hope. That's all you can do. Just hope, and obviously the world is abuzz with Beckham and Norman, and we'll get to Odell and Josh coming up with Mr. Silverman. We are going to try. I'm in the process of working on four shows. A surprise show, the Ryan Ballingy PGA Tour preview show, just like normal. I can confirm that one, which will air the week of January 4th. I don't have a date. It'll probably be live on January 4th, but you never know. You shall see how that all works out come the new year. Working on a golf review show. So we will eschew, I love that word, eschew golf talk for right now. And just point out that when Jordan Spieth tells you that Odell Beckham is going overboard, he probably is. And I will also point out that Jordan Spieth wore a Dan Bailey jersey when he was honorary captain on Saturday night. You rarely see kicker jerseys. Maybe in New England you see kicker jerseys, but not usually. Because of what Adam and Terry did for years. So, kudos to Mr. Spieth for having a unique, for having and wearing and bringing a unique jersey to AT&T Stadium on Saturday night. And as my dad said, kickers and golfers have a lot in common. They are both solitary endeavors that can make or break your life. For a team, it is what it is. I mean, in a team sport, obviously, you're losing it for the whole crew. For a singular sport, you are only losing it for yourself, your caddy, your family, and your team. But still, it can be a tough way to bounce back. The PGA Tour is almost back, and we're so glad to see Mark Rolfing of NBC and Golf Channel will be there in Maui on his home place, homeland. I guess it's homeland. Home. To be there for the coverage. That's also David Faraday's debut with Dan Hicks and Johnny Miller. Johnny and David should be interesting theater. Interesting theater always happens when Mike Silverman joins the program, and Mike Silverman joins the program in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and available on archive at any time on iTunes.
Sometimes tough isn't enough.
Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
We are back. We are live. And we are joined by a longtime friend of the program. Say good evening, America, the world, anybody else who is listening on iTunes. You've made it to iTunes, Mike, you and Taylor Swift.
I feel very honored. That's quite the comparison to be put next to. Unfortunately, I'm about $50 million less rich than she is, but, you know, that's close.
Only $50 million?
Yeah, maybe like a couple hundred.
I was about to say, you know, you are happily married, but I didn't, you know, you stumbled upon all that wealth.
Yeah, I don't follow her career too closely, but I guess she's doing pretty well.
Let's start with Lauren, because we're talking about marriage. I was going to do this at the end, but I'm all about segues, and this is a nice segue. I don't think I had you on when I did the whole 8 years of the relationship advice segment thing back in September, did I?
I don't remember. If it wasn't that show, then I was on either the week before or week after. I know I did something close to that. I just don't remember if it was the exact show.
No, it's interesting because you and Lauren go back a while. Myself and talking about Lauren on the show go back a while. And it's on. You know, when you hear teeing it up, do you think me? Do you think the segment? Do you think Lauren? What comes to mind in that context when you hear me mention you know, teeing it up in 8 years?
When I think of teeing it up, my first thought is coming into the studio about to do our show, and I would always come in while you were usually doing your end-of-the-show relationship segment. And I always thought, one, it was the ultimate way to relax before doing a show, because anytime I went in there, everyone was in a good mood and having a good time and relaxed. So it took any nerves away. And then, two, it was always very entertaining and fun listening to all your assortment of guests during that segment, especially guys, having you and Fletcher go at it a couple of times during that segment was always entertaining.
What's funny about that is back last month when the 5 year, 6 year anniversary of Tiger's accident happened, I went back and I listened to my first show back after the accident, because I think in the context of everything that's happening in Tiger's career, it's an interesting listen to listen back to that whole monologue. And I happened to listen to part two before I listened to part one. And I stumbled upon jazz music from the relationship advice segment. That had some good stuff in it.
You did. I mean, it was pretty good. I don't think people realize you put some time into that, and you made it pretty legit. I mean, I thought it was a good break from sports. Sometimes you just need a little break from sports.
The time and effort that the ghostwriter put into it, who is now engaged himself, by the way, but the time and effort that he put into it really helped me, and it helped transmit it to become the award-winning segment that it is. And to my left on my desk is that certificate.
Well, hey, it was well deserved, and I mean, like I said, I think it was a good way to kind of diversify the show and bring a new wrinkle to the show and just something different than what everyone else was doing. And that's what you need to have a good show.
Thank you. The Chicago Cubs have successfully won November and December. True or false?
I would say true, but I'm hesitant to say true. So I'm interested to talk to you about this, and this, I was excited about this, because me personally, I was not a huge fan of the Starlin Castro deal. But then I've been talking to some Yankee fans, and they're saying this Adam Warren kid could actually be pretty good. So I like what most of the moves they did. I'm not totally sold on the Castro for Zobrist and Warren, basically. But I hope I'm wrong. Zobrist is just a little old, but he brings a good winning culture, and hopefully this Adam Warren guy is pretty good, and it's a win-win for both teams.
Well, let's back up. Before we talk about what happened, before we talk about this deal, let's go back to what happened. My dad is a Met fan. I watched almost every hitter and every inning and every pitch of that whole playoff run. So obviously that includes the club series. What happened? You guys went to becoming inept. It was stunning how quick and easy that was for the Mets. And I know the Met pitching is spectacular, but that stunned me. That absolutely shocked me.
I was surprised it was a sweep. I wasn't surprised they lost. I think the one thing that Cubs fans kind of forgot throughout the year is that the Cubs did not have a very balanced lineup, and it's very hard to win in the playoffs when you lead all of baseball in strikeouts by a significant margin. So the problem was they strike out way too much, and that's what happened in that series, and they don't have a lot of contact hitters on the team. And what's circling to the trade then, what's interesting is Starlin Castro might have been their best contact hitter. So they needed to balance the lineup, and I think that's what their plan was going into the offseason, and getting guys like Zobrist and Hayward are two guys who are much better at contact hitting and not striking out as much. And I think that the stat that blew me away about the Cubs now is going into the 2016 season, 25 people in 2015 had on-base percentage of .350 in all of baseball, just 25. And now going into the 2016 season, the Cubs will have five of those people. So adding Zobrist and Hayward, to me, those were playoff moves. Those were two signings to help them win in the playoffs and kind of balance the lineup. Because you're right, the Mets series, it was not even competitive. So hopefully that helps when I'm assuming they'll get back to the playoffs, and I'm assuming the Mets will get back to the playoffs too. So it should be interesting.
It certainly should. We're talking to Mike Silverman. Here's my thing about the Castro deal from the Yankee perspective. The Yankees have a problem. They got old. They got really old, and they were playing people who had creaky bones. And creaky bodies, and we're getting worn down. And the furtherness of that is that the Yankees could not find a second baseman. And they got this guy, Rob Refsnyder, who a lot of Yankee fans wanted to put and become the full-time second baseman down in the minors, young kid. And I guess Brian Cashman and company felt that he wasn't ready. And you couple that with this weird series of events that have happened to the Yankees, where they haven't made the playoffs, or they limp into the playoffs, and they really haven't done much. They haven't gotten any mojo. Their bats have gone silent. And while Refsnyder may have been a good guy to build upon, I think they were looking for a more surefire offensive threat to pair with Didi. And that's where they came up with Castro as the more surefire MLB-ready replacement. The Yankees are going through a complete metamorphosis in all their position players. You are going to see all these guys who have been down the minors, all the guys who they said no to for all these trades that you heard rumored about. Bird and Judge and all these kids, because they were so concerned about trading away the future. And what you got in Warren is somebody who can do everything. He was the 2014, 13, 15, 12 version of what Mendoza was for those Yankee teams back in the late 90s and early 2000s. He can start, he can go three innings, he can go two batters. He is a very much plug him in and he does his job and he'll keep you in games type guy. In big spots, he wasn't great, but in some big spots, he was great. But then again, he's young, and when you're on the Yankees, every spot becomes fodder for 3 days on talk radio. So it's this weird situation where you're thrown into the fire with a team that was old and creaky. And, you know, it's so weird because with the Mets, when the Met bats, especially Daniel Murphy in the World Series, went silent as that series went on, it became imperative for the pitchers to hold down Kansas City to zero runs, one run. You know, it was just, it was so weird. And that's the pressure that the Yankees have felt too often in recent years, is their pitchers have felt this pressure to hold everybody to nothing because nobody gets any run support except that they that all the big bats, mostly the old bats, wake up. So that's why I think they wanted Castro and they had to give something up, and they gave up Mr. Warren.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know the Cubs wanted Brett Gardner, but the Yankees wouldn't trade him for Castro. And then, I mean, I think everyone agrees the Yankees probably got the better end of the deal, but from the Cubs' standpoint, it was more of dumping some salary because they pretty much exchanged Castro's contract for Zobrist's contract. And I think Yankee fans are going to be pleasantly surprised. Castro definitely has some mental gaffes, and I don't know how well that will play in New York, but he, in terms of, like, raw talent, is one of the better players I've seen. And he did have a pretty bad slump this year, and I think mentally he just needed a change. I think maybe because he wasn't one of Theo Epstein's guys, it kind of got to him, and they benched him halfway through this season, and he came back after they benched him, and in September he was the best hitter on the team. He batted .400 for the month. So, I mean, all the talent's there. He's one of those guys that it's just getting it out of him, and more times than not, they will. And I think for what the Yankees gave up, I think they got a very good player with a very good contract. He's going to slot in at second base with him and Gregorius in your infield. That's a pretty good infield. I don't think they gave up much, and I think Cubs fans were a little upset initially because for a team trying to go for it all and win the World Series, Adam Warren sounds like a nice piece, but when you give up a guy like Castro, I think a lot of Cubs fans were expecting an impact player back, and I don't know if Warren necessarily is that guy. So it should be interesting, but it's pretty crazy. I know Castro's excited to go out to New York. I was reading some stuff. I was personally pretty bummed because he was the last guy in Daytona with me. So now none of the guys from the Daytona Cubs are actually on the Cubs anymore. But it'll be interesting. You got a new Yankee fan. I'll be rooting for him on New York. So
yeah, there you go. Here's the thing about this city. When you mess up mentally, okay, when you make a mental gaffe, when you throw the wrong base, when you get caught stealing for the third out, whatever, just own up to it. The thing we hate in this city are people who do not own up to their mistake and then blame somebody else. And we hate people who misbehave and are not properly mature for their age. However, if you look at all the guys who have come through this city and thrived, especially in baseball, take responsibility, own up, and work on it and get better. That's all we care about. Just get better at your craft. And I look at somebody like David Wright, who was hurting and probably is still hurting right now and worked his butt off to get back with the bat, and just his mere presence raised the team. And obviously, a big hit come playoff time. But those are the people we like. We give tons of second chances, but just make your mistake, say sorry, and then just go play.
I think you'll have that in Castro. The problem with Castro, which is going to drive Yankee fans nuts, is Starlin, for some reason, the hardest of hard plays, he's going to make all of them, and then there's going to be a routine ground ball that you and me could field with no issues, and for whatever reason, he's going to miss it. And I think that's going to drive some Yankee fans nuts. It drove a lot of Chicago fans nuts because they'd be watching the game, and they'd say, Starlin, you can make the hardest plays with anybody, but then it's like sometimes you're just daydreaming and there's a routine ground ball and you just miss it. So I'm super curious to see how it replays in New York, but I think you got a good player, and I think in the bigger picture they just didn't really give up that much, and I think it was a good trade for the Yankees, and hopefully it's a good trade for the Cubs too.
Sounds like Robinson Cano, and sounds like Tiger Woods' short game over the last 3 years.
A little bit. final
baseball thing. Where are we in the curse? And where are we with Steve Bartman? Has this city finally forgiven Steve, and are you finally feeling like the curse will finally be broken? Or is this still down deep in the dungeon of this is never going to happen?
So I'll answer that in a couple parts. One, I think the Steve Bartman thing people have moved on from. I know a lot of fans this year started a crowd fundraising site on GoFundMe
right.
to get Bartman to come. It's kind of sad that he didn't feel safe. I mean, he responded saying thank you, but he didn't feel safe, so he didn't come to the game. I think people are past that. We're going on now 108 years, I believe it'll be next year. Yeah, so I think people are optimistic, but there's still a part of people that are still a little bit worried. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe because I'm just such a diehard baseball guy, in the back of my head, I know that more than likely the Cubs are going to have to beat the Mets at some point. And those are two franchises that kind of rebuilt their teams in different fashions. And at the end of the day, in the playoffs, pitching normally wins. And what cost the Mets against the Royals was, one, they didn't have enough bats, but two, the Royals don't strike out. The Royals had the fewest strikeouts in all of baseball. So that was kind of how they counteracted the Mets pitching. And I think the Cubs are going to try to get there. Can the Cubs win this year? They can, but some of these guys are going to have to take the next step. I mean, it could be great. If Chris Bryant and Kyle Schwarber and Jorge Soler, all these guys get better, I mean, this team's going to be unstoppable. There's no guarantee of that happening, but I think there's optimism in Chicago. This is the most optimism in Chicago I've seen in a long time for the Cubs.
All right. A couple things here as we continue to talk to Mike Silverman. Year one of Jim Harbaugh was? Fill in the blank.
One more time. Sorry, I misheard you there.
Sorry, no problem. Year one for Jim Harbaugh was?
I was excited about it. I said it was a good move.
Was it a successful season, or were fans underwhelmed?
I think it was a very successful season because, talent-wise, Michigan football should have been about a 6-6 football team. And what Jim Harbaugh did in his first year is he beat all the teams he should have beat. Now, granted, he lost to both Michigan State and Ohio State, but those aren't his players. It's still not a super talented football team, and he got the best out of people. Jim Harbaugh, for a college coach, after Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, might be the best coach in college football. His skill set and his personality don't translate to the pro game, which is why I think it failed in San Francisco. But in terms of college coaches, he's one of the best, and Michigan football is going to be a powerhouse again within 2 or 3 years.
The Bears. It is
not so much.
You guys say adios to Jay Cutler. I feel like I ask this of Chicago fans every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know, I've actually been more than not, I side with Jay Cutler. I think people need to look at Jay Cutler in a similar fashion like Eli Manning. Jay Cutler is not going to be a vocal leader. He's not going to be the rah-rah guy. And similar to Eli, now does he make more mistakes than Eli? Maybe. But people need to realize that sometimes leaders don't have to be like that. I think the problem this year for the Bears is it's always easy to blame Jay Cutler, but this year the Bears' receivers have been atrocious. After Elshon Jeffrey hasn't played most of the year, and after Elshon Jeffrey, their best receivers, they found him on the street. Matt Forte's getting up there in age. They have one of the worst offensive lines. So while Jay Cutler is probably not the ultimate solution, I don't think he's the ultimate problem either, if that makes sense.
Right? We're talking with Mike Silverman. Mike, we've known each other for a while now. It would not be an appearance on Teeing It Up if I did not ask you some odd questions, right?
Of course. Of course.
Okay. The weirdest thing that you saw or experienced in 2015 that is rated, well, suitable for radio, let's put it that way. You can curse because I don't care. But the craziest, weirdest experience that happened to you or that you saw in 2015 was?
It's funny that you say that because that's a tough question. And I was trying to think as quickly as possible about an answer. But I'm going to go with something I saw 2 weeks ago. So for work, I had to fly to a town called Baxley, Georgia. And Baxley, Georgia, for those who know a little bit about my past, is very similar to Hazard, Kentucky. It's a very, very, very small town. Very small. Ironically, Devontae Freeman and Byron Buxton, the guy in the Twins, are from Baxley, Georgia, a town of about 4,000 people, but it's just very small, very rural, very country. So I went down there with one of my staff, and I took the staff out to dinner. We went to Applebee's, and we're sitting at the bar at Applebee's. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to watch some Thursday night football, not be bothered, have a simple night. What ended up happening was the two people next to me got into one of the most in-depth, intense religious discussions I've ever heard in my life, to the point where I was super, super close to considering leaning over and being like, hi, I'm Jewish. What do you think of me? I mean, it was just the most ridiculous conversation. I didn't even know some of these forms of Christianity existed. They were just, it was so intense. It was incredibly weird. All this is happening at Applebee's. I'm just trying to watch a football game. It was very, very bizarre.
The best thing you did in 2015, even though there technically is 10 more days left in 2015,
best thing I did in 2015. That's a tough one. Oh, I'll give Lauren some credit for this one. The best thing I did in 2015 was she convinced me to move to a neighborhood a little bit north of Wrigley Field into a brand new built apartment that was twice the size of the place we were living in. And I was very reluctant at first, but I caved, and I'm glad I did because it's a pretty nice place. And if anyone wants to come to Chicago, we got an extra bedroom and everyone's welcome. So I'd say that was the best decision I made in 2015.
Now, I've watched too much HGTV.
Great channel.
What?
I watch that channel all the time.
Okay.
I'm kind of upset.
So, all right. So, first of all, hardwood floors?
My show on HGTV is I'm a big Property Brothers guy, and I'm a big House Hunter International guy.
I don't like the international show because I can't envision myself living in these places, but the Property Brothers are cool. The Property Brothers happen to be big golfers and were profiled in Golf Digest a couple months ago.
Really? See, I did not know that. I knew that the Property Brothers are definitely actors, or that was what they were focusing on initially. They just have to happen some property real estate background, but I did not know they were big golfers.
Yes. And do you know there's a third brother?
I did know there's a, I discovered this while watching Property Brothers on the Ranch, and that's when I found out there was a third brother. I really like that. I like that channel. It's fun to see all those houses and stuff.
Just like the Mannings, there's always a third.
Exactly.
That is Mike Silverman. He formerly, of many years of the Mike and Mike Sports Show.
Yeah, my partner in crime right now is enjoying the beautiful weather in Florida.
I'm so used to just saying that line. I'm just so used to uttering it.
Yeah, it was a good run. I really liked how our show, your show, and our show was right back to back. I think that was a fun 2-hour block there.
No. Hold on a second. When I was listening to the Tiger episode, I remembered the intro that senior year that started the 5-hour sports block or the 7-hour, whatever that was, and that was part of my intro.
Is that because Mike and I kind of did our back-to-back thing?
No, because I think Buto Sports Bonanza was like after you guys or something.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to help, and have a happy holidays to everyone listening.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Kwanzaa. We'll see you Sunday for the Sunday Sprint. Take care.